Hi, welcome to the Mastering the Attention Economy podcast. Today's guest is Justin Sua, an executive coach for elite performers. He is currently with the Tampa Bay Rays. He previously worked with the Boston Red Sox and the Cleveland Browns. He also travels the country speaking and training various organizations on how to optimize performance and create a culture of excellence. In addition to his work, he's written two books on mental performance and hosts a daily podcast titled Increase Your Impact. Justin, thanks so much for joining us today. And I think let's just jump right into it. So first off, can you tell, you know, the audience and who's listening, what is mental coaching?
Yeah, first of all, great to be here. Thanks for having me, Ari. And yeah, what is mental coaching? I get that question all the time. And I think the best way to describe it is to think about how many times parents tell their kids or a coach will tell the child to focus, to relax, to trust the process, to be in the present. And it's something you hear all the time. But what you don't hear is you don't hear the mom, dad, coach teach these kids how to do those things, how to relax, how to focus, how to be confident. And basically, as a mental skills coach or mental performance coach, my job is to take the science of the neuroscience, cognitive science, social science, performance psychology, and to distill it into heuristics, basic standardized, not even standardized, but easy operational principles to help athletes execute these things when it matters most. And so that's what I do, primarily work with elite athletes, because elite performers, there's three things you can train. You can train your body, you can train your craft, and you can train your mind. And that's what I do.
Yeah, so that's a really great description. You know, I wasn't familiar with that until, you know, I started interacting with you on Twitter. Yeah. Can you maybe for those who don't have access to a professional coach like yourself, how can someone apply the lessons that you teach to professional athletes and apply it to their day to day? Maybe, you know, they're starting a business or they're, you know, a salesman at a large company. How do they, you know, do those tactics?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. It all comes down to where do you start? You think about mental, where do I start with anything? And I think it starts with self-awareness, really taking a look in a mirror to understand, okay, where am I, what are my strengths and where am I deficient? Where are my weaknesses and my blind spots? And that's what it all comes down to or begins. A lot of people say, okay, how do you develop and what is mental toughness? And mental toughness or mental flexibility or pliability, however you want to say it, it comprises of a number of different things. It's what's your level of confidence like? What's your ability to control yourself under stress like? What's your resilience like? And taking a look at what your strengths and what your weaknesses are, and then really creating a game plan for it. It might be starting with your values. What do you value? It might be starting with your why. What is your why? What is your model for confidence, your sources of confidence? What are your confidence killers? What are your distractions? What are your morning routines, your night routines? And so as you can see, it's very nuanced and it depends on the person. It's very contextual and it evolves over time. And so my job is to really ask those questions. And so to really answer your question better is if you want better answers, start asking yourself better questions. And I think it starts with something as simple as journaling, grabbing a journal and writing down what you notice from day to day, what your energy is like, where your attention is, what your thought process is like. And it sounds like a lot, which it is, but I would start documenting and start capturing, just really kind of audit yourself. That's where it starts.
I love that quote. You know, if you want better answers, you know, start questioning yourself and figuring out better questions and journaling. You know, when you start working with professional athletes, you know, do you find that many of them, they were focused always, you know, are you bringing them up 10x? And, you know, even more so, what are some of the things and the differences between, you know, the college athlete and the pro athlete, and then like the pro athlete and the elite athlete? You know, what are some of those subtle differences you see that keeps them focused and that keeps them attentive?
That is a really good question. I think one of the big differences, whenever I get this question a lot, and one of them is their willingness and their ability to embrace the boredom of consistency. The elite performer, they are just willing to do those mundane things every single day, pounding at their craft, because it ultimately leads them to being the best version of themselves when it matters most. The pressure, the attention, the million-dollar contracts, the stakes are extremely high. They are performing against other competitors who are at the highest level, at the tip of the spear. Now, the amateur athlete, a lot of times they're going through this. We all have this arc of our craft, and a lot of them are they have the high goals. They want to be great, but a lot of them, they don't have the either a strong why or the willingness to do the things that are required to be great. So that's one of them. And another one is the elite athletes and their willingness to learn from failure. They are able to, because they fail on the stage. They fail on the big stage with everyone watching, and their willingness and ability to look at their failures and extract lessons to use them as stepping stool as opposed to stumbling blocks. For the amateur athlete, a lot of them, they get overly attached to their failures and their shortcomings. And when they fail over and over and over again, they see them as part of their identity as opposed to an event, and they don't learn from them. So those are a couple of things just right off the bat that separate the difference from the elite and the amateur.
And, you know, I think the other question, you know, to get on top of that one again, so a really specific question that I had that just popped into my mind. So I think about like field goal kickers in the NFL. And, you know, some of them, I was watching a video of, and you might know his name, a Brazilian kicker who kicked for the Tennessee Titans. And he went like 0 for 4. And he got cut by the Titans. This was last year. And he hasn't been in the NFL since. You know, the success is just like make or break, right? That quick. Yes. You know, how do you keep athletes motivated? So, you know, if it's a baseball player and they go 0 for 5 that day, or it's a kicker and they go 0 for 4 that day, you know, Are they in that mindset always that they're on to the next one? Are you working with them to, you know, make sure that they're staying focused there? You know, how much is it you're doing it versus they've been coached on the mindset and they know, like, I just got to get over that hump?
Yeah, that's a great point. And you bring up a very interesting distinction between, you brought up a couple of things. Motivation, first of all, let's touch on motivation. I was just on a phone with an elite athlete yesterday. And the reason I say elite athlete, just to differentiate, elite athletes, he said he was working with somebody and he says, this person I'm working with told me that he's not motivated. And he laughed. He's like, what does that even mean for someone to not be motivated? And what's funny is these elite athletes, in my about a decade working with elite performers, whether it be dancers or military, you'll never hear them talk about the word motivation, to be honest. They don't say I'm motivated. And what's interesting is going back to that embracing the boredom of consistency. We know that motivation, of course, it's called self-determination theory. It's that Ryan and Desi are the founders of this seminal research from out of Canada. And they said that there's three things that are the most important variables for motivation. And it's number one is in no particular order, autonomy, your sense of control. Number two is your relatedness, the relationship you have with others. And then number three is your competence, your perceived competence that you're getting better. Now, these elite athletes, they have this built in where they feel that they're getting better, they feel that they're in control of their career, and they have a strong relationship with those around them. Now, this field goal kicker you're talking about, it's not so much motivation, but it's being able to control and to frame his attention, going back to what we were talking about, attention, under duress, under stress, because is he focusing on not missing or is he focusing on making kicks? And if you fail over and over and over, you can hardwire your brain or rewire your brain to be more prone to be maladaptive perfectionist, where if I mess up, there's no way I'm going to come back, versus learning from failure. And so when we work with these athletes who are failing over and over again, it's less motivation and more helping them reframe failure and reframe pressure to help them perform at their best. And some of them come naturally wired to do it. Some of them need to learn to do it. And my role isn't necessarily to shove mental skills down their throat, but to serve as a listener, as a sounding board, and as someone who can help them see it in a different way, give them a different perspective, a way that they've probably never seen before. And that's really my role working with them.
So, you know, that brings up an interesting point. And I know you used to work at IMG Academy, and probably it'll be good if you just give a quick explanation of what that is. But how much do you think, like, social comparison theory plays a role in this type of stuff? And the concept for listeners not familiar, where if you're with a, you know, a peer group that is of a higher level than the average peer group, you know, you're constantly comparing yourself to them. Do you think that elite athletes, when they're with other elite athletes, are boosting their performance? Is that making a big difference?
Yes, I would say, for those who don't know IMG Academy, it has been dubbed by some people the Disney World of youth athletes, where some of the athletes, the best youth athletes from around the world, 60 plus countries, come there to train in a number of different sports. And there is something to what you just said. There's something about we've heard of emotional contagion, and we've heard just even the simple phrase, I think it's Proverbs, iron sharpens iron, when the tide rises, all the ships rise. When you get into when you're surrounded by people who are passionate and are driven and are competitive, it tends to weed those who aren't at that level out. And I think, to your point, there is a degree of that. Now, there's also the shadow side of that, where you can get so focused on others, so focused on results, so focused on checking the temperature of others, that you're not focused on your strengths. You're not focused on your own process. And that's something that these athletes are constantly checking themselves and revisiting. Hey, what's my why? What's my process? What am I going to do? What can I control? Because it's easy, very easy, to start to peek over to other people and gauge your progress and your success based on others. And you have no control over that.
So, you know, I want to shift gears a bit from, you know, athletes to maybe executives, right? Mm-hmm. I know you don't just work with athletes, but you work with other elite performers. You know, do you notice a difference between, you know, that NBA Hall of Fame player versus the CEO of a Fortune 500 company? Do you think they have a lot of similarities when it comes to staying focused and being attentive, or are there differences?
Absolutely. Absolutely see similarities. One of the differences is, number one, is when you're dealing with sport and the mind-body connection and physiology, where it's a closed loop. There's winners, there's losers. It happens in 2 hours. There's that difference. However, cognitively, the effect of pressure, and I say this a lot to different audiences, elite performers don't have the corner market on stress. They don't have the corner market on focusing, being in the present and the high stakes and performing against all odds. They don't. You're right. MBAs and CEOs and artists and musicians and dancers, everyone has their respective domain and their respective role, they're going through these exact same things as well. The imposter syndrome, we all experience that. A lot of elite performers experience that. Lack of confidence, the importance of creating a routine, the importance of having a why. We talked about attention and having a barrage of distractions hitting them every single day, and knowing what to focus on and knowing what to ignore. And as you get constant reps in your craft, you'll get better at that. Know what to ignore and what to focus on. And so, yes, as I sit down with executives and business professionals or surgeons or even hairdressers, to listen closely and to see a lot of commonalities between all of these different populations, and very similar pitfalls, very similar traps, and very, very similar principles that can help each one of them succeed.
You know, another question that I have is, you know, I've read stories about someone like Kobe Bryant, who, you know, he's famous for his work ethic. And, you know, I think Ray Allen was another famous story, where the day after, I think, the Celtics won the NBA championship, he went to the dentist because he had to get a tooth fixed or something like that.
Right.
You know, do you think there is a downside to some of these folks on being too focused, and maybe they forget about having fun and enjoying the game, and it goes from you know, when they started playing it for fun to becoming, you know, their business. Is have you noticed a difference there and an importance of having fun?
Yes, you bring up a good point. I don't know if you, for those who have listened to this, Michael Jordan had a documentary, The Last Dance. ESPN showed it, and everyone was talking about it. It was at the height of the quarantine. Everyone's trapped inside, and we're all kind of watching this together as a country. I don't know, worldwide. It was a talk on Twitter. But something interesting happened. Everyone was watching this, and while he is one of the greatest athletes of all time, absolutely, love his shoes, love the Jordan brand, all of that. What was happening is a lot of people were mistaking that it is the only way to be a leader, that you have to be gritty, you have to have this hard nose, you have to get in people's face. And as I was watching that, I was thinking, hey, let's pump the brakes and be careful, because like you said, there is a shadow side to hyper-focus. There is a shadow side to really any strength. There's a shadow side to kindness. There's a shadow side to honesty. There's a shadow side to wanting to constantly be being a voracious learner. There is a shadow side to all of these things. And I loved your point. Yes, we want to look at people, but we want to also be very mindful of, like we talked about earlier, our own self-awareness. We each have our own, what we call, hype number. Some are a little bit low key. Some are more extroverted. Some are more introverted. Some, they perform at a really high level when they want to prove their haters wrong. Some, that's the worst approach to take. They perform much better when they're just having fun and smiling. Some, they hate that approach. They need to just focus on a more spiritual context. Some, that they don't even believe in God. And so it's this identifying what works best for you. And also to know that what works for you might change as your career evolves. Numerous times, I've worked with players who their goal was, their why had to be shifted. It had to change because it became stale unbeknownst to them. And to constantly check in and see what works for me. I think we learn in the literature and the research of creatives, if you pay somebody to do something they already love, their intrinsic motivation goes down. All of a sudden, they end up experiencing writer's block and creative block, and their joy for doing something they already love to do starts to be diminished because now they're getting paid to do something they already loved. And that's something to be very mindful of. You can't change it. You're not going to eliminate it. Like, you're not going to eliminate fears and nerves, but being aware of it turns down the volume of it so that you can get to work and do your thing.
That's a great fact. I did not know that about, you know, paying someone and their intrinsic motivation goes down. That's amazing to me. Yeah. You know, as we wrap things up, you know, for those listening, you know, where can they follow you on social media? You know, where can they buy your book? I know you have a podcast. Any other things you want to promote? Here's your chance.
Yeah. Justin Sua, JustinSua, Twitter, Instagram. I'm trying to figure out Twitter a little bit and engage a little bit more. I think that's how we found each other, but you follow me on there, you'll find everything else.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Justin, I really appreciate you joining us today. Thank you so much. For those listening, thanks for joining in, and until next time, have a good one.